He leaned against the brick, fumbled in his pockets until he found the unfinished stub of cigarette he had abandoned earlier. He lit it carefully, trying not to burn his fingers or his beard.
I'll tell you something. You're walking on gallows ground, and there's a hempen rope around your neck and a raven bird on each shoulder, waiting for your eyes. And the gallows tree has deep roots, for it stretches from heaven to hell. And our world is only the branch from which the rope is swinging.
He stopped.
I'll rest here a spell,
he said, crouching down, his back resting against the black brickwork.
Good luck.
Hell, I'm fucked. Whatever. Thanks.
Shadow walked back toward the town. It was 8 a.m., and Caro was waking like a tired beast. He glanced back to the bridge and saw Sweeney's pale face, striped with tears and dirt, watching him go. It was the last time Shadow saw Mad Sweeney alive. The brief winter days leading up to Christmas were like moments of light between the winter darknesses, and they fled fast in the House of the Dead. It was the 23rd of December, and Jacqueline Ibises played host to a wake for Lila Goodchild. Bustling women filled the kitchen with tubs and with saucepans and with skillets and with Tupperware, and the deceased was laid out in her casket in the funeral home's front room with hothouse flowers around her. There was a table on the other side of the room laden high with coleslaw and beans and cornmeal hush puppies and chicken and ribs and black-eyed peas, and by mid-afternoon the house was filled with people weeping and laughing and shaking hands with the minister, everything being quietly organized and overseen by the sober-suited Messieurs Jackal and Ibis. The burial would be on the following morning. When the telephone in the hall rang, it was Bakelite and black and had an honest-to-goodness rotary dial on the front. Mr. Ibis answered. Then he took Shadow aside.
That was the police. Can you make a pickup?
Sure.
Be discreet. Here.
He wrote down an address on a slip of paper, then passed it to Shadow, who read the address, written in perfect copperplate handwriting, and then folded it up and put it in his pocket.
There'll be a police car.
Shadow went out back and got the hearse. Mr. Jackal and Mr. Ibis had each made a point individually of explaining that, really, the hearse should only be used for funerals, and they had a van that they used to collect bodies, but the van was being repaired, had been for 3 weeks now, and could he be very careful with the hearse? Shadow drove carefully down the street. The snowplows had cleaned the roads by now, but he was comfortable driving slowly. It seemed right to go slow in a hearse, although he could barely remember the last time he had seen a hearse on the streets. Death had vanished from the streets of America, thought Shadow. Now it happened in hospital rooms and in ambulances.
We must not startle the living,
thought Shadow. Mr. Ibis had told him that they moved the dead about in some hospitals on the lower level of apparently empty covered gurneys, the deceased traveling their own paths in their own covered ways. A dark blue police cruiser was parked on a side street, and Shadow pulled up the hearse behind it. There were two cops inside the cruiser drinking their coffee from thermos tops. They had the engine running to keep warm. Shadow tapped on the side window.
Yeah?
I'm from the funeral home.
We're waiting for the medical examiner,
said the cop. Shadow wondered if it was the same man who had spoken to him under the bridge. The cop, who was black, got out of the car, leaving his colleague in the driver's seat, and walked Shadow back to a dumpster. Mad Sweeney was sitting in the snow beside the dumpster. There was an empty green bottle in his lap, a dusting of snow and ice on his face and baseball cap and shoulders. He didn't blink.
Dead wino.
Looks like it.
Don't touch anything yet. Medical examiner should be here any time now. You ask me, the guy drank himself into a stupor and froze his ass.
Yes, that's certainly what it looks like.
He squatted down and looked at the bottle in Mad Sweeney's lap. Jameson Irish whiskey. A $20 ticket out of this place. A small green Nissan pulled up, and a harassed middle-aged man with sandy hair and a sandy mustache got out, walked over. He touched the corpse's neck.
He kicks the corpse,
thought Shadow.
And if it doesn't kick him back,
he's dead,
said the medical examiner.
Any ID?
He's a John Doe,
said the cop. The medical examiner looked at Shadow.
You working for Jackal and Ibis?
Yes.
Tell Jackal to get dentals and prints for ID and identity photos. We don't need a post. He should just draw blood for toxicology. Got that? Do you want me to write it down for you?
No, it's fine. I can remember.
The man scowled fleetingly, then pulled a business card from his wallet, scribbled on it, and gave it to Shadow, saying,
Give this to Jackal.
Then the medical examiner said,
Merry Christmas.
To everyone, and was on his way. The cops kept the empty bottle. Shadow signed for the John Doe and put it on the gurney. The body was pretty stiff, and Shadow couldn't get it out of a sitting position. He fiddled with the gurney, and found out that he could prop up one end. He strapped John Doe, sitting, to the gurney and put him in the back of the hearse facing forward. Might as well give him a good ride. He closed the rear curtains, then he drove back to the funeral home. The hearse was stopped at a traffic light, the same lights he'd fishtailed at several nights earlier, when Shadow heard a voice croak,
And it's a fine wake I'll be wanting, with the best of everything, and beautiful women shedding tears, and their clothes in their distress, and brave men lamenting and telling fine tales of me in my great days.
You're dead, Matt Sweeney. You take what you're given when you're dead.
Aye, that I shall.
Sighed the dead man sitting in the back of the hearse. The junky whine had vanished from his voice now, replaced with a resigned flatness, as if the words were being broadcast from a long, long way away. Dead words being sent out on a dead frequency. The light turned green and Shadow put his foot gently down on the gas.
But give me a wake tonight, nonetheless. Set me a place at table and give me a stinking drunk wake tonight. You killed me, Shadow. You owe me that much.
I never killed you, Matt Sweeney. It's $20,
he thought,
for a ticket out of here. It was the drink and the cold killed you, not me.
There was no reply, and there was silence in the car for the rest of the journey. After he parked at the back, Shadow wheeled the gurney out of the hearse and into the mortuary. He manhandled Mad Sweeney onto the embalming table as if he were hauling a side of beef. He covered the John Doe with a sheet and left him there, with the paperwork beside him. As he went up the back stairs, he thought he heard a voice, quiet and muted, like a radio playing in a distant room, which said,
And what would drink or cold be doing killing me, a leprechaun of the blood? No, it was you losing the little golden sun killed me, Shadow. Killed me dead as sure as water's wet and days are long, and a friend will always disappoint you in the end.
Shadow wanted to point out to Mad Sweeney that that was a kind of bitter philosophy, but he suspected it was the being dead that made you bitter. He went upstairs to the main house, where a number of middle-aged women were putting saran wrap on casserole dishes, popping the Tupperware tops onto plastic pots of cooling fried potatoes and macaroni and cheese. Mr. Goodchild, the husband of the deceased, had Mr. Ibis against a wall and was telling him how he knew none of his children would come out to pay their respects to their mother. The apple don't fall far from the tree, he told anyone who would listen to him. The apple don't fall far from the tree. That evening, Shadow laid an extra place at the table. He put a glass at each place and a new bottle of Jameson Gold in the middle of the table. It was the most expensive Irish whiskey they sold at the liquor store. After they ate, a large platter of leftovers left for them by the middle-aged women, Shadow poured a generous tot into each glass, his, Ibis's, Jackal's, and Mad Sweeney's.
So what if he's sitting in a gurney in the cellar?
Said Shadow as he poured.
On his way to a pauper's grave. Tonight we'll toast him and give him the wake he wanted.
Shadow raised his glass to the empty place at the table.
I only met Mad Sweeney twice, alive. The first time I thought he was a world-class jerk with the devil in him. The second time I thought he was a major fuck-up, and I gave him the money to kill himself. He showed me a coin trick I don't remember how to do, gave me some bruises, and claimed he was a leprechaun. Rest in peace, Mad Sweeney.
He sipped the whiskey, letting the smoky taste evaporate in his mouth. The other two drank, toasting the empty chair along with him. Mr. Ibis reached into an inside pocket and pulled out a notebook, which he flipped through until he found the appropriate page. He read out a summarized version of Mad Sweeney's life. According to Mr. Ibis, Mad Sweeney had started his life as the guardian of a sacred rock in a small Irish glade over 3,000 years ago. Mr. Ibis told them of Mad Sweeney's love affairs, his enmities, the madness that gave him his power.
A later version of the tale is still told, although the sacred nature and the antiquity of much of the verse has long been forgotten.
The worship and adoration in his own land that slowly transmuted into a guarded respect and then, finally, into amusement.